Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From the back ring at the Sales Pavilion at Keeneland, a very good Breeders' Cup Friday, Future Stars Friday morning. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevevick.com. Joined immediately by affable co-host Marty McGee. And boy, you would be the ideal co-host scenario.
We're breaking like a Wesley Ward two-year-old out of the. We're breaking like a Wesley Ward two-year-old out of the gate here, Bick.
Bick,
how's it going, Bick?
There's been obviously a crush of handicapping, a flurry of analysis, and then news and tidbits that continue to, to kind of bubble to the surface. The latest this morning, in the last 45 minutes or so, Christoph Soumillon. Testing positive.
Did not know that.
For a second time. And so Soumillon will not be able to ride. Tarnawa, who is a big consideration, obviously, in the turf, is now going to be ridden by Colin Keane. And Keane, actually, even before he gets on Tarnawa, he's on Siskin in the mile. So for those that aren't familiar, Colin Keane, he's Irish. And, you know, the spelling, of course, is different, but, you know, the Keane family, you think about, and you know, where are we? It's kind of funny that here's a guy stepping in, and Tarnawa and Siskin. So Colin Keane may very well be familiar to a lot more North American players after this weekend.
Is there a question in there?
There isn't, actually. That was more or less a meandering whatever, and a dangling participle. Oh, boy. Marty, we'll get to, obviously, to some Saturday opinions and so forth. Your topic, certainly your races that you're covering and the situation that the entire DRF team has had to deal with just you and Nicole Russo, but the remote, and we're going to talk to Jay Privman, we're going to talk to Dave Grenig as well this morning, but the work being spread out, and everybody has you wouldn't know that it's just the two of you here.
Well, Mike Welsh is here too.
Well, Welsh is doing, and Mike is doing. You know, Mike is sort of. He's sort of unseen. He's
he's doing all the works. And
he's
all
sequestered.
That, mostly that and the sprint. But this is the first. I'm sure this will be brought up by Jay. This is the first Breeders' Cup he has not attended ever.
And the belief is, we talked about it last Friday, the belief is from Jim Gluckson, he is the only credentialed media member that has covered every single one, the 36 that preceded it.
I think Jenny Reese might be in that. But
She missed one.
Did she?
She had a miss. In fact, Jenny just walked in. She missed one.
Okay.
A couple of years. Remember when she had surgery.
Okay. Yeah, well, Jay fully intended to be here.
Oh, I know.
And it's been less than a week, and he said, no, I'm throwing in the towel. He's being respectful of the COVID situation here, and man, what a day this is today.
Well, it's
going to be 68 later, the sun shining bright. I mean, can you imagine all the people who would have been here reveling in this atmosphere? But you know, the estimates I've been getting, Steve, is like 2,500, which seems about right. I don't know if it's boat days or not. I don't want to know what the rules are.
I think there's some people that are running tomorrow. And
do they get to come
if
today?
They want. And I think there's some arrivals. My friend Lee Einsiedler, who's running with Casa Creed in the mile.
Okay.
Lee will be here early afternoon, for instance. So
okay.
I think there'll be quite a few. And on the breeding community, obviously, that was a nice accommodation, you know, given the source of so many of these horses that will be on hand.
Right.
Really nice.
And everybody gets guests, so I guess it'll be 3,000 or 4,000. I don't know. The Derby, God, that was like, it seems like 5,000 or 6,000 people there. But anyway, the Preakness, though, was there weren't 1,000 people there, I don't think. They had the Frank Stronach tent or that thing out in the infield. There was, they told me there were 70 people in there, and then there was like wow. 250 down on the, where the, they had 26 of those Partier boxes, like the, you know.
Monmouth, you can't, that, you can only use Partier box. That's they have a trademark.
Yeah. Love those things. I went in one time in 87, then I worked there the whole 92 meet. But
they are acknowledged by stadium designers as the first luxury box accommodations in any sport, in any edifice.
They were awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I guess they're still. What year would that have been?
Oof. 30s. When was
that
building?
Long ago. Wow.
Give or take, yeah. I would think. I mean, the latest post-war, but I think. Because Monmouth's got an interesting history, but going back, obviously, to the 18, whatever it is, 18, what's their gate say? I forget the date. But.
You know, speaking of them, you know, 07 obviously was horrible in terms of. I remember sitting there the Saturday before, and it was perfect, like today is in Lexington. Why do we never say, let's go back to Monmouth? Why do
it's
people
sad.
Never say, why do people say, well, of course, Arlington's about to die, but like Texas. Woodbine, Aqueduct, you know, we've had one-offs, a number of one-offs, and I'm wondering why Monmouth isn't, why they don't, well, of course, we haven't been to New York since 2005.
Right.
So, but that's an entirely different story. But, yeah, I'd like to try Monmouth again because the infrastructure is there.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what's funny? You think about the first one we had here 5 years ago. And juxtapose it against Monmouth. Monmouth, it was beautiful every day of the week leading up to Thursday, and then it went wrong. Here, last time, it was miserable Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Every day was cold and rainy, 38 degrees and nasty. And then all of a sudden it turns around, and Friday and Saturday were idyllic. So amazing.
Yeah, and they got really lucky with it last time. And so who knows what it'll be like in 2 years here. So I am glad they gave him the do-over.
Yeah, that's nice.
I mean, I'd like to get back to New York at some point.
That'd be great. I think we may have to wait until the Belmont building is re-outfitted. So,
and what about how great Santa Anita is? I mean, it's at one point they were saying we're just going to do it here every year.
Well, there was going to be that 10-year deal, and Satish and I talked about it at the time, and I at that time I thought that. It runs counter to the mission, you know, of the cup.
Right.
But then after those 2 years, remember when they were doing the two pairs, 2 years, 2 years, 2 years? Mm-hmm. We did two at Santa Anita, two at Churchill, and then back to Santa Anita 2 years. And after those 2 years, I said to Satish, I understand now because you were guaranteed of good weather, you were guaranteed fast and firm. You know, there were things you could count on.
Right.
So it there were a lot of properties, but it's still more fun to do this because there's plenty of people that can't, that pandemic or no pandemic, that can't travel, you know,
right.
out there.
Sure.
So being in this part of the country, you know, Cincinnati, you can ship to Cincinnati within 24 hours of 70% of the country. I don't know if you know this. It's a trucking distribution thing.
Did not know.
70% of the country is reachable in 24 hours from Cincinnati. So the same essentially is true of here. So this is just here in Churchill, just perfect.
Yeah.
And I like Churchill a little bit. We'll talk the dirt mile with Jay, but the one turn mile property, that to me is what the whole idea of that dirt mile was supposed to be.
Well, really, here it's like a mile and 70 yards is what it is. They have I think it's a 70-yard run-up. So they've really kind of shoehorned it into this mile and a 16th circumference,
right.
of this, and it really kind of doesn't fit. You know, not only do you have that, well, you know, that run-up, it's really not it's not really a mile race.
No, it's not. And on that topic, let's use that as a segue, Marty, into one of your races. There's three races that are going to be finishing at the first finish line the next 2 days, the two juvenile races and the dirt mile. Explain to people how the first finish line changes race dynamic.
Well, I mean, you don't have as much time to run down the stretch with your, if you have a stretch runner, you're you're probably at a disadvantage. Although we've seen a lot of the races unfold in the way that they go too fast, and then you end up having these loopers go on and win at the mile and six. We've seen it a lot of times. As a matter of fact, in my preview, I don't have it here, that I wrote for that big book that we put out, the preview PPs, I documented how the percentages at the recently ended fall meet here at Keeneland, how come-from-behinders and stalkers and closers weren't necessarily at a disadvantage versus the wire-to-wire types going that short stretch thing. So that is a bit, that's kind of like the Pimlico tight turns thing. It's, maybe a bit of a myth in there. However, having said that, I would think that the speed horses in the juvenile fillies, which is only a field of seven, but nobody, like I wrote, nobody's complaining about it, given the actual entrance in there. It ought to unfold with day out of the office, out of the one-turn races, including the Champagne, going to the lead, with Simply Ravishing right behind her, and then Princess Noor getting a good trip. I mean, she won't be caught wide because the field isn't that big. So I think that your man Gary Young and everybody else who's in the Baffert corner with Princess Noor, they should not have any excuses. Whether or not she can improve on her buyer performances, that's the $2 million question to be answered in the juvenile fillies.
Gary Young was on with us yesterday. In fact, those that were listening to the replay just heard Gary in the last few minutes. And, of course, Gary had been responsible for her purchase. And so when I asked him, do you believe that the figs are not relevant in her case? And he said, I spent $1.3 million, so I'm all in. He says she's never been out of second gear. But at the same time, you don't know how they respond when the demand,
right.
The horses are funny that way. Some respond and some, get an apple in their throat.
Yeah. They got her 9 to 5 on the morning line with the other two fillies I mentioned, Day Out of the Office and Simply Ravishing, both 5 to 2. I think Princess Noor will tick down a little bit stronger toward even money. I mean, her rep is just that strong, I do believe. Despite her not having had the buyers that the other top fillies have had.
But you actually, Simply Ravishing ended up being in your tab.
Yeah, I liked Simply Ravishing. Then, of course, I got the Joe Talamo route with Girl Daddy, and both he and Dale. I mean, Joe's been getting on her a little bit, and, he told me the other night, man, she is one good filly. So, I mean, it might set up for her if Luis Saez goes out and challenges Day Out of the Office and they hook up in a prolonged type of duel, I think it would set up for either Girl Daddy or Princess Noor.
Interesting. And you're essentially discounting the two New York route fillies with the Day Out of the Office and VQuest.
Well, I mean, how many can you go with?
You got to break some eggs.
Yeah. At some point, I think Crazy Beautiful is going to hit the ticket. She's going to slug up, and I might actually play the race that way vertically with Simply Ravishing and Girl Daddy on top with some Princess Noor in there, but Crazy Beautiful would have to be third or fourth. I do that a lot, play a
super, absolutely, yeah.
Super like that.
Absolutely.
The clunk up where you're going to get a decent price with her anyway.
Well, so. And that's one of our topics that every year, and I'm sure it'll come up later, I think when Ed sits with us at DeRosa, we discussed it, I think, last Wednesday with Ed, about ticket structure and ways to approach. Kenny Kirkner, who, of course, for many years ran the contest here and was responsible for the simulcast deals and everything else, Kenny taught us years ago at Churchill the reverse tri-key.
Right.
Finding a 30-to-1 shot that is absolutely not a win candidate, unless things were really extreme, but a horse that's going to come pick off the bottom rung and then basically going 5 by 4 by 1.
Right.
So it's a $20 multiples, 50 cents. That's a $10 bet. And if you hook them all up, the four top choices, five top choices, and that 30-to-1 shot, $300 try, $500 try, right. $700 tries. It's an amazing formula. And when you go back through the charts and see how many monster prices do this. Bet on Sunshine.
He was third in the...
Twice.
Yeah, he was third in the...
2000.
And he was third in 1997. Yeah, because what was her name? Exotic Wood, trained by my brother-in-law, Ron Ellis, was fourth. So you could have really crushed the trifecta there if you used the McGee and Ellis horses third and fourth. I think Elmhurst won that year, and he was some kind
of
price.
Yeah, he was. He was 30.
I'm sure the super 30. Paid to the moon.
Did they have supers then?
I don't know.
There we go. All right. Marty, I want to get to Saturday because there'll be so many people listening on the pod and on the archive. A quick rundown of the rest of your Friday opinions.
Friday opinions, I'm going with Golden Pal over 2nd of July, 14-13. There is a scratch in there, by the way. We do have the early scratches.
Oh, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. I completely forgot to ask.
Let's see. We got the 8 horses out of there, I believe. Let me turn to this. Yeah. Amanzi Yimpolo comes out, and the 15 runs.
Blame the Booze. So Wesley yanks Amanzi and gets Blame the Booze in. This is a horse nobody's name has come up. 30-1.
16 and 17 are out.
Does Corrales ride?
I assume so.
Well, that's good for him.
Unless he has something else.
Well, unless Luis Saez moves over.
Yeah.
I'll check with, we can maybe check with Karen.
Yeah, so anyway, I got a 14-13 there. I think that Phil Gleaves, man, what about a parlay on the Phil Gleaves
horses?
That
would be wonderful. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, 14-13 there. After that, I got Imprimis over God Stormy and the Turf Sprint. Excuse me.
You're going the wrong direction.
Wrong day, yeah.
Battleground over Seal Away for you in the Juvenile Turf.
That would be correct. And my best bet of the day is Clement with Plum Ali in the Juvenile Phillies Turf.
To get him off the Breeders' Cup duck.
Oh, wow.
And McPeak, they could both break through this weekend.
Doesn't McPeak have more starts than Clement ever?
Yes.
Well, McPeak has 31.
Oh, then I think maybe they're actually, they may be, wow.
I had totally forgotten about Christophe.
Christophe may very well break through, and I keep looking, and I will.
And what about Jackie's Warrior at going a mile and 16th? I don't know. I've got to go with Cox in there with Essential Quality. So that horse was so impressive on both Derby Day and in the Breeders' Futurity. So, yeah, and I thought Pletcher had a sleeper in there with Likeable. So 5-7-4 for me in the nightcap today here at Keeneland.
Outstanding. Let's turn to your Saturday race, as I can tell everybody. 38 starts for Christophe Clement and for...
McPeak's only 31.
Super trainer Kenny McPeak, 31.
Okay.
So Christophe has more.
Huh? Wow.
How about that? 0-69 between them. And they've had some good. And listen, they've had plenty of board hits.
Oh, Decorated Invader, I thought last year was the best horse.
Crazy.
In that. Yeah.
Crazy.
So, yeah. Nick's Go for Cox. I mean, this horse is, he's really turned the corner. I think he's going to go gate to wire in the dirt mile. Mean Mary, same thing out front for Graham and the Philly and Mare Turf over. Just a hard knocker, Starship Jubilee. I'd love to see her run her race.
That'd be great.
I loved Vekoma until he came out of the sprint, so I defaulted to Frenzy Fire and Diamond Oops. Joe Talamo in the mile with Ivar. Chad right behind him with Digital Age Uni and Raging Bull. I got Chad filling out the super with everything else. Monomoy Girl draws the outside. And every time, it's been incredible how many times she's gotten the outside. The Breeders' Cup Distaff last year, the Kentucky Oaks, La Torienne, and again, she's outside. And I think that Florent Giroux is going to know what to do. Dunbar Road, to me, is a sleeper in there. So she's helping to blow up your tricks by splitting Monomoy Girl and Swiss Skydiver. Magical in the turf, pretty obvious there. And then Tom's Detot, I'm really rooting for Little Al. You know, the horse didn't get to run his race in the Whitney. Al backed off on him. Everything's gone like clockwork since then. I think he's a great horse. So let's see what happens with that. Those are my picks.
Any crazy price that you'll just toss a bob on?
Oh, gosh. I I'm sure I will, but I haven't gotten that far. What about speech behind Serengeti Entrance?
I've been talking speech for weeks on end.
She's gonna trip out. It's really
what I thought.
You know, just you got the three
even
up,
before
up
the
front.
Draw.
Yeah, the three up front, and then her, and then she and. Just sit there and, yeah, wait
we
for it to fall apart.
And I'm not sure, I can't remember if I think Mike Welch had hinted, I forgot about this, in the midst of Biz, of course, for people that may not have heard that yesterday, Mike said he thought that In the Midst of Biz might be coming out, but he said, let's not say it. And then hours later, word came that she, in fact, was out. I felt bad for Manny Esquivel, who was going to get a Breeders' Cup mount, and Cipriano Contreras. But it's a significant scratch because it allows Johnny room to operate with Gamine, because Gamine from the two was going to have In the Midst of Biz, even if it was just for 100 yards or 150 yards, she was going to be abreast. Now Johnny can kind of come out of the two path and even potentially prompt and float Venetian Harbor and Serengeti Empress. So it's not an insignificant scratch.
Right. I like the fact, though, that Serengeti Empress draws outside the other two. To me, that's a tactical advantage for her. That's why I got her. But then Speech just sitting behind the three of them. Bell's the one, you know. God, I'd love to see Neil Pessel win. I mean, what a great guy. You know, he's just perennially upbeat. You know, it'd be nice if she can. I don't know if she can run that same race she ran on Derby Day, though. So, anyway.
Well, Marty, we're going to get Nicole Russo on the phone here, and I will let you go out and take care of everything that that you've got to handle, and
All right.
will reconvene next week for some recapping. And, of course, Churchill, you should mention, Churchill is dark today and tomorrow.
They are.
And back on Sunday.
Yeah, they ran Wednesday and Thursday, and they're going to run again Sunday, because why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Exactly the same idea as Waffle House. Why wouldn't you? Whenever I send Marty a picture of me at Waffle House, I get the same response. Why wouldn't you?
I've been on this no sugar diet, though. I haven't had Waffle House for quite a while.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Well, you've got a whole new. You got a whole new. As we wait for Nicole, Casey's calling Nicole right now. Tell everybody the good. Can we talk about? No, you don't want to kibosh it. Marty's very motivated. It's going to be. it's going to be the Marty of our youth.
Mm.
And I know with Jay calling Jay waiting to join us in just a little bit, a collective premature happy birthday to the three of us.
That's it. Class of 59.
DRF McGee, everybody, and Marty and Nicole captaining the DRF coverage on site with Mike Welch and Babs, Barbara Livingston. Nicole is going to join us, and I wanted to make sure to get Nicole in, not just for her two categories, the Juvenile Turf Sprint and the Turf Sprint, right? She's got both the sprints. But Nicole has been on the ground at the gaps monitoring the horses during training and has laid eyes on almost everything other than horses that might be doing their jogging on the training track. And Nicole has got a great eye. And if you haven't seen her little videos, they're terrific. Ed DeRosa is going to join us momentarily, too. Ed, I'm going to slip Nicole Russo in. All right, Marty, thanks so much. And Nicole Russo joins us now from somewhere on the grounds. Nicole, good morning.
Good morning. Happy Breeders' Cup to you and all your listeners.
I appreciate it, and appreciate the work that you've done all week from the early morning hours. You've been positioned, and even in the dark, have sent out some images of horses galloping, coming on and off the track. And, you know, as we've said, Nicole's got a tremendous eye for the physical properties. And we're going to talk about your two races, but I do want you to kind of comb through the last week in particular and notate the horses that you've been very impressed with, just based on, you know, physical and attitude and the way they've responded to their morning machinations.
Definitely. Well, if you want to look at tomorrow's two big races, that, you know, they're all big races, but the Distaff and the Classic, of course. You know, Monomoy Girl, I've been watching her since the fall of 2017 when she first came up as a two-year-old, and she looks as good this week as I've ever seen her. You know, I think they've got her razor sharp, this, you know, a virtual certainty to be her final race, and I think she's going to go out and leave it all out on the track. Certainly a very good field, and I don't think it'll be a walkover for her by any means, but, you know, she is just training as good as I have ever seen her right now and is a deserving favorite as she looks to earn another championship. Swiss Skydiver does not look like a filly who's run the campaign that she has. You know, certainly she shows no signs of regressing. And if you're looking for a bit of a longer price with those two favorites in the Distaff, I think Valiant's coming back here, you know, where she won the Spinster to a track she obviously likes. She's just been training very forwardly. They're kind of trying to keep a lid on her this week. But, you know, she gives the impression of a very forward horse who's going in the right direction. And then as far as the Classic goes, you know, I haven't seen anything bad from anyone in training, but if I were going to circle the two horses who have impressed me this week, you know, Authentic is another one where he's coming off two very hard-fought, very brave races, and he doesn't look like a horse who's had all that hard racing. You know, he's not tucked up at all. He doesn't look dull at all. You know, he has a lot of energy and is training very forwardly, and 'tis the law. I think, you know, they obviously skipped the Preakness to point for this race. They wanted, you know, a fresh horse at 8 weeks. And, you know, certainly there are some things with the draw and, you know, that didn't work in his favor. But I think in terms of anything that they can do with the horse to have him ready, they've got him right where they want him. And then, of course, I kept a close eye on the European horses. As you know, this is our chance to take a look at them. And the two that I'd circle who impressed me from the various European contingents, Kameko for the Mile is, you know, looks like a very good feeling horse. And Lord North in the turf just, you know, has really put in, you know, I think some powerhouse gallops. He's another one who's very eager and forward going right now.
Wow. To dial back to the Distaff comment for a minute, Valiance, the first morning, really impressed me. And sometimes grays are funny because you don't necessarily, you can't necessarily discern. They might get the mottled coat, but they're a little funnier. I just liked how perky she was and I think I used the word sprightly yesterday. Danja was another one like that a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. And, you know, when I'm watching the horses, too, and trying to discern how they're feeling, if they're being asked for run, if they want to do a little bit more, you know, I definitely watch the rider. You can see if a rider's holding their horse, if, you know, their feet are forward to kind of get a little leverage against the horse. And, you know, Valiance looks like a horse where they're saying, like, okay, you know, let's wait till Saturday. Let's not leave it all out here. She certainly looks like a horse who wants to do more.
Who as the week has gone on, you know, because especially with the ship-ins, Nicole, and it's a little tricky because there's horses, of course, that you don't see on a regular basis as opposed to the Kentucky-based runners. Who may have caught your eye that you didn't necessarily expect or as the week went on appeared to be getting more and more focused?
You know, like I said, you know, I do come back to Monomoy Girl because she is the horse where, you know, where I have such a frame of reference for her, and I've seen her, you know, throughout her career. You know, as you just alluded to, that is sort of a difficult thing where you have these horses coming in from other jurisdictions, and maybe if you're not as familiar with them, you don't necessarily know if they're a good workhorse, if this is how the horse goes. For a lot of that, I'll refer you to my colleague Mike Walsh and his excellent Breeders' Cup Clocker reports, which compile information from our team that's very familiar with all of these horses, because it's so important to put all of that stuff in context. And the horses that I do have that context for are the Kentucky horses. And I mean, Monomoy Girl, since coming in from Churchill Downs earlier in the week, started out strong and has gotten stronger.
Well, let's shift gears from physical appearance to specific thoughts. And your two races, the Turf Sprint and the Juvenile Turf Sprint?
And the Juvenile Turf Sprint.
Yes.
The kids' table and the adults' table.
I love it. Nicole, talk about today. Golden Pal given a trickier assignment. But, you know, I watched the race earlier, in fact, again this morning. And, you know, for those that are saying, oh, he's going to be compromised, having to, you know, hightail it from out there, I don't sense that. He's got a cruising speed.
You know, he does, and I think, you know, I think the horse that perhaps got the more difficult assignment is Bodenheimer, who's drawn just a little bit inside of him in post 10 in this full field of 14. This has been a popular addition to the program. It's drawn full field. Bodenheimer, I think he's got a lot of speed, and he wants to be on the lead where Golden Pal might be able to work out a stalking trip off of him. But Bodenheimer, I think, from 10, is going to have to use himself early, you know, to clear those horses. And certainly, you know, he's had some wicked fractions in the Indian summer and was still there at the end and still finished decently. You know, but I do see Golden Pal. He's going to have to use some of his speed, but depending on what happens to the inside of him, he may be able to work out a nice trip. That being said, I did think there was a good amount of speed in the race. So, you know, I do think this is a spot to play around a little bit. Golden Pal's a very, very deserving favorite. I think this is a special horse that they could have a lot of fun with next year. You know, that being said, these are still young learning horses, and these races are over in the blink of an eye. It doesn't take much.
Well, and, you know, certainly you would prefer, I would imagine, in a 14-horse field, you know, and the scratch still allows for the draw in, and Wesley Ward takes one out and gets one in. Blame the booze. A blame gelding and a homebred for Mark Breen coming out of the bourbon and now cutting back. It's kind of interesting. This will be technically his first turf sprint. He had the two races at Belmont and Saratoga that came off the turf and actually ran well. So he's a bit of a mystery, frankly. He ran very well going short, Nicole. This is the first time I'm even really considering Blame the Booze and looking at him.
Well, you know, I think, you know, you see the trainer intent there with the races that came off the turf, and then they sort of, you know, ran him in the opportunity they had to see if he was going to go on to a race like the Juvenile Turf. That didn't work out, so you have this in your pocket to cut back. And Blame has been, you know, a very, very good turf sire. He has some good runners over in Europe as well. So he's probably an interesting proposition. You know, I think there are, as I said, you know, there is the possibility for a little bit of a pace meltdown in here, I think. And this is a race where if you say, like, okay, I don't want to play favorites all day, that, you know, I think you do have the opportunity to be a little bit creative.
Who do you want to reach for?
You know, I think I look at the horses I hold in high regard, like a Golden Pal, like a Bodenheimer, and I look at who's been running with them. One horse that you might want to think about is Cowan for Steve Asmussen.
Yep.
He's one who took a marked step forward, I think, his last couple of starts when they put him on the turf, and he was running on well behind Bodenheimer in the Indian summer right on this course. So I do think if he has a little bit of pace to run at, you know, he's one who could make some noise.
Let's shift to Saturday and get the Saturday opinions in, particularly your race, the Turf Sprint. And we go back to 5 years ago and Mongolian Saturday in a thriller. And this group, certainly kind of fun as I reach for, there we go. This group, you got Got Stormy, of course, second in the mile last year behind Uni. Mm-hmm. Uni will try to reprise. Got Stormy, since being refashioned by Mark Cassie and Gary Barber as a turf sprinter, has been really good. There's also some local specialists. Leinster certainly feels like a horse with Rusty Arnold. Glass Slippers, we've talked about yesterday extensively with the Europhiles. Imprimis. Then there's some fun stories like Michelle Lovell with Just Might. You've got you know, any number of players. Alexandra, international type for Team Valor, and Neil Drysdale. What are your thoughts leading into tomorrow?
I think this is a really fun and really wide open race, because the horses who are ostensibly, you know, your favorites that you talk about, Leinster, Imprimis, Got Stormy, Alexandra, they're all graded stakes winners at Keeneland. Leinster, of course, with, you know, that outstanding recent form, setting the course record in the Shakertown in July, coming off the win in the Woodford. He's a fresh horse compared to last year's run in the Turf Sprint, which Rusty Arnold really likes for him. Imprimis has been so good this year. He's rounding up to his top form, and, you know, he won last year's edition of the Shakertown. And then Got Stormy, who, as you said, has refashioned herself, and Alexandra, who's coming off the layoff, which hasn't necessarily been a bad thing in the Turf Sprint historically. They've won the last two editions of the Franklin County for Turf Sprint Fillies and Mares at Keeneland. So they all have that very good form on the course. I think they've got the speed drawn inside of them, which is good for Leinster and Primus, who I think would like to be stalking that pace, and for Got Stormy and Alexandra, who will be coming from off the pace. So I do think it's interesting in that, you know, those four really seem, you know, they would all seem to have an affinity for this course and, you know, be coming in decent form. And then, you know, you go from the local horses to the horses coming from the farthest away, and that would be the, you know, the top international hope, Glass Slippers. And so often the criticism of Europeans in these turf sprint races is, well, they've never run on that, you know, sharp left-handed turn of an American turf sprint. And Glass Slippers actually has run and won around a left-handed turn, albeit back in 2018. So she does have that experience under her belt. So I think that that's interesting and perhaps removes one vulnerability for her, leading to just my impression that this is such a well-matched field.
Outstanding. Nicole Russo, everybody, DRF Russo. And Nicole, obviously, Monomoy is your big banker for Saturday. Any other spot tomorrow that you know you'll slip to the machines and and get a ticket in?
You know, frankly, I'm still pondering a lot of it for tomorrow.
No problem. Nicole Russo, everybody. And between Marty and Nicole, they've done the work of literally an army. Nicole, thanks so much for all the coverage. We'll obviously talk next week, not only recap, but I'll take this opportunity with your visit to remind that on Sunday, you know, not only is there racing at Churchill and everywhere else, it's opening weekend at in New York, but the Night of Stars sale, the Afternoon of Stars in this case, at Phasing, and then scene will shift on Monday to Keeneland again, right here where we are. There will be horses in the back ring heading out, and the big bloodstock season sales, always a big, interesting couple of days. So we'll catch up with you next week on that as well.
All right. Sounds terrific.
I can't thank you enough. Nicole Russo, everybody. And Nicole, make sure you're following her. I mean, she, between the bloodstock side of things, and then when they, you know, when they call on her for, you know, things like this, for Breeders' Cup and Triple Crown, and, well, Derby and Keeneland seasons as well, Kentucky Downs, she can really do anything. One of our favorite additions, and one of our longtime favorites joins us now, sitting across Ed DeRosa, Twin Spires, and BrizNet, and we've been directing everybody. We had Vance the other day, had a terrific conversation with him, and Scully's going to join us by phone shortly. Ed, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to another Breeders' Cup.
Well, first thing I have to say as I watch Michelle McDonald walk by and follow Nicole Russo is it always gives me a great sense of pride to see all the Thoroughbred Times alums still around. Thoroughbred Times is not, unfortunately, but I mean, for the 10 years I worked there, learned a lot, made a lot of friends, but, you know, more importantly, was always proud of the work we did, and it's good to see us still pounding the pavement in the game.
Tom Law?
Tom Law. Pete Dank, Jeff Lowe with West Point Thoroughbreds, Mike Curry's at ABR, Frank Angst with Bloodhorse. So Yeah, really proud of the group I worked with, and glad to see we're still at it.
It's like summer camp.
Then
everybody, you know, goes out and...
Amy Owens with Keeneland.
Oh, wow, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well.
But yeah, Breeders' Cup's finally here, and, you know, for whatever reason, that we'll see if my discipline actually follows my thoughts coming into the week, but definitely feels like one of those you just... really have to know where your strong opinions are and be willing to live and die with them. Just some races I absolutely feel stronger than others, and don't want to lose money on the ones I don't feel as strongly about.
Hey, we talked a little bit, and I referenced our conversation from last Wednesday regarding approach, and I want to remind everybody, because there's still a couple of hours before the whole card gets going, and 2:30 for the first Breeders' Cup race this afternoon. Fund your ADW account and get that done, because you never know what hiccup might be awaiting. So do yourself a favor,
especially in a time of unrest.
Well, it's just crazy, because you'll go to fund. And something hooks up, and next thing you know, you're on the phone, and no good. Get it done today, especially, get it out of the way before the weekend. In terms of the wagering menu, we got the two-day bets, of course. I'll remind everybody, juvenile turf to the turf, juvenile fillies to the distaff, juvenile to the classic. So 3 2-day events to consider. And then, of course, there's all the approachable 50-cent increments. Yeah. And the biggest innovation to me, Ed, in the wagering opportunities in this event has been the 50-cent try and the 50-cent pick three. Because there are places where if you've got a absolute, foundation opinion, you can go on either side and you can build within the race or spread as wide as you need to, including all buttons, on either side for a 50-cent pick three or the tries. Very similar structure concepts.
And this would be a dime talking to the super, but Anthony Stabile of NYRA HRN mentioned this yesterday. Sadler's Joy and Arklow completed the super with Enable and Magical. Very, very logical top two in that 2018 turf. And I should have looked it up knowing I talk about it. He couldn't believe what the super paid that year. And the opinion for him was Arklow. And an example, if you have the right key opinion at a price, even with the favorite, on top, literally, the chalk exacta, the fields are big and the money's so spread around. But it's all about having an opinion that you're willing to zero in on. You don't want to go Enable Magical then 8x8 necessarily. But if you feel comfortable narrowing on Arklow and, you get your ticket to 20, 30 bucks and can make a, few $100, even four-figure score, depending on how it shakes out, there's opportunity there, as well as in the 50-cent tries, as you noted.
Let's dive in, Ed, and very quick rundown of your Friday thoughts.
It definitely comes down to beating the favorites in the main track juvenile races. Princess Noor, I'm going to believe the numbers aren't fast enough to warrant her price. Obviously, we know she can win. I listened to Jonathan Kinchin say he mentioned it to Baffert, and he said she's never gotten out of second gear. That's fine, but is the favorite against that group. I'll let her beat me, and I promise this is not a homer pick, but Day Out of the Office. I thought looked amazing in the present, and shame on me. I wasn't even aware that I knew the trainer, obviously, but I hadn't even seen going into that race that she had trained at Belterra and Thistledown. So that was a little extra lagniappe after the present to enjoy that victory. But I know it now, and would be thrilled to know that that blanket is going back to Jack or Mahoning, wherever Tim is now. And, I just think she has an upset look. I think Kenny McPeak's two fillies, look bullish to me. So Day Out at the Spa on top, but Princess Noor out of the number completely. That's definitely a race I'm tackling strong.
And you mentioned how you're going to approach the boys' race. The favorite there, obviously, is going to be maybe the shortest price of the weekend.
Well, Nashville.
Oh, I'm saying the cup race. Yeah, cup races, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say it's going to be him or Monomoy Girl is the shortest price. And I'm less bearish on him. I do think Jackie's Warrior has a better chance than Princess Noor to win. I do like Essential Quality quite a bit. It's done nothing wrong, has a win over the track. My wagering strategy for the race, though, Steve, is one thing I uncovered last year, actually, and it's still held up. On the Brisnet late pace ratings, a two-year-old who runs 100 or better has a flat bet profit next out. Unfortunately, there are four such horses in this race.
Who are they?
Pardon?
Who are they?
Oh, yeah. Camp Hope, King Fury, Dreamer's Disease, and Hot Rod Charlie. So my thought is with those four all being long shots, Jackie's Warrior can win the race, and if King Fury gets in the number, you're still okay. If Dreamer's Disease gets in the number, you get two of those four in it. I'm not going to be ripping up tickets if Jackie's Warrior wins. So my approach there, knowing I like some long shots for a chance at the verticals, as you said, with the 50 cents, it's very approachable. I'm not as against Jackie's Warrior in the bigger field. Princess Noor is in the smaller field, and I don't think there's as much opportunity vertically if she finishes second or third or, of course, wins. But the juvenile, my approach is to get one of those century figures, as I call them, into the number at a price.
Really? Interesting. I like it. Let's turn to Saturday, Ed. I want to spend the lion's share, and let's rip through the lineup, starting with the filly and mare sprint.
I'm going with Serengeti Empress. I know it's I know she's going to have it tough on the front end, but as we saw in the Ballerina and in the Derby City Distaff, she's capable of digging in. And Luis Saez does have the last win on her. He's back aboard, and it's a similar approach I'm taking in the Distaff. I just do think the older filly, accomplished filly in this case, has the edge over the 3-year-old. We didn't see that last year with Covfefe. She was clearly best, but there weren't any Serengeti Empresses in that field either, or at least Serengeti Empresses we know her today, because she was in that field. But or did she run in the Distaff last year? Yes, we can look. Oh, yes. She was in the Distaff.
Yeah.
So now she's in the sprint, and I think that makes things really difficult for Gamine. So Serengeti Empress for me.
Turf sprint.
I wish he was a little bigger price. We'll see what happens with this being such a full field. But Leinster just sticks out to me on the numbers enough that I'm willing to plant my flag. 100, 101, back-to-back. Both of those at Keeneland. And Luis Saez again. But, you know, he won on this one last time. And in a race where a lot of people like to spread, I mean, those turf sprints are notorious for people thinking they're skull busters. And they are. But Leinster to me is a horse I wouldn't mind at all being live to as a single in that early pick five.
I'll write my stuff up tonight, this afternoon, but I got a feeling that's where I may end up landing. Makes sense from a lot of perspectives. The Dirt Mile.
This one I'm billing is the trainers I'm cheering for. Exact. I am going to stick with our collector on top. Obviously, would love to see Tommy get his first Grade One after a tumultuous end of the Classic season for him, missing the Derby and the Preakness just being sort of an even effort. And I think Grant Forster's Pirate's Punch fits
so
this group.
Great. So great.
And what a win that would be for him. But look, that Salvatore Mali got 100 Brisnet speed rating. The numbers come back favorable in other services as well. That was a two-turn mile. Brisnet designated as a fast pace that he sat off and then kicked clear. Really should have won the previous race as well, if you ask me, via the DQ or should have not been DQ'd, but he was under the wire first. And Pirate's Punch, to me, I put out a comment a week ago. I thought there'd be at least one $100 horse this weekend, and I put out my opportunities for Friday, and when I do the same for Saturday, he's 20-1 on the line. I don't know if he'll get to 50-1, but Pirate's Punch for me definitely is one of the live long shots of the weekend.
I love it. It'd be wonderful. And if you end up with a Tommy Drury, Grant Forster, Exacta, there's going to be there'll be some very happy faces, and it's really it's a fun race. The turf, fillies and mares.
Well, we all know I love Sister Charlie, and I'm going to have a hard time. I can't let her beat me, but, you know, sentimentally and objectively, or not sentimentally, objectively, I just see this pointing to rushing fall. I mean, what a career she's had, 2, 3, 4, and 5. She's sort of been in between, depending on where the Breeders' Cup is, what races make sense for her to run in. The mile and 3/16ths, I don't think will be an issue, especially since she's 5 for 6 here at Keeneland. And, you know, it's incredible to think back. This is her fourth year running in grade ones, beholder-esque, but on the turf. And I do think she's the most likely winner. But I'm going to, you know, just, I know it's not the smartest horse player move, but I do like Sister Charlie enough that, you know, don't want to be holding the bag. But I did put Rushing Fall on top.
Well, she's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yes. So, without question.
No argument there. I've got to make Cayenne Pepper. I took a shine to. Marcus was trying to kind of talk me off, but Nick Luck, like Terrabellum, it's a race. I think I've got my win candidates pretty much nailed down. I've got to feather in what I'm going to do underneath the sprint, and of course has lost a lot of shine as the year has gone on, or the fall has arrived.
Yes.
between Volatile getting injured and having to scratch, and then the Vekoma situation, and he was kind of coming into this with a flat tire anyway.
Right.
So that ended up not being a total surprise. Does the mantle just simply fall to Yaupin?
I think so, but CZ Rocket merits respect. Definitely has a good Ragazin pattern coming into this. I have not looked at Thoroughgraph yet for Saturday, but keen to see how they see the form of this one, who has obviously turned things around since Peter Miller and company went to 40 grand down at Oaklawn, and just 5 in a row and nothing wrong. And if Yaupin doesn't lead him gate to wire, it seems like CZ Rocket is going to be the one to get the jump. So I'm not overthinking this one. I've heard a lot of opinions, and I certainly respect, especially with the scratch of the favorite literally scratching and then Volatile coming out earlier but not making the race, I could see why others might want to default to a price. But to me, it's a 210.
Very good.
10-2.
The mile, and there may be more win candidates in here than anywhere else.
It's a barn burner, and you know, on top of just the competitiveness of the full field, I think we're in a situation where we know we're going to get some pace. We have horses who have run over the track. Obviously, we have good representation internationally as well. I came into the week predisposed to thinking, well, I want a Euro in here, but ended up landing on Ivar. I just couldn't get away from how good he looked winning that Shadwell Turf Mile. And I think a repeat of that would be good enough to win this. 4-1 would definitely be my absolute floor from a price I'm willing to accept. But I did put him on top. I think he's the most likely winner, and could be a cagey single for the reason you said. I think a lot of people are looking to go deep. And March to the Arch, I thought was worth using. He was actually a horse I liked a little bit in the Woodbine Mile at 5-2. Starship Jubilee beat him. Opted for the Philly and Mare turf, and I think March to the Arch, you know, has the look of a horse who's consistent enough in his last two at a price here to maybe be in the mix.
The late pick four starts with the mile, Distaff, turf, and classic. The late pick three, Ed, run through it.
I'm with Nicole, based on half of the conversation I heard, which was you, but I do think this is Monomoy Girls' race to lose. It's great that Swiss Skydivers in here, some of, I would say two of the Breeders' Cup's top 10 races are the winning colors in Personal Ensign Distaff, 3-year-old against older, and the Songbird Beholder Distaff, another 3-year-old facing older, and maybe we'll be in for a similar show here. But similar to my Serengeti Empress thought, at this level, and especially since Monomoy Girl relatively lightly raced for being a 5-year-old after missing last year, I do think that's an edge over the 3-year-old. It's, you hate picking against either because of what they've accomplished and how special they are, but I know the barn is effervescent of Monomoy Girl and how she's been training into this, and I'm going to ride that wave.
Excellent. And if there's an upsetter, who somebody beside Skydiver?
Yeah, I think Valiant. Luis Saez seems very well mounted. And Ollie's Candy, you know, they both have Bristonette speed ratings that, for whatever reason, if the top two don't fire, I see them as clearly the next two on the list. And, you know, there might be some opportunity if one of them even sneaks in for second over one of the other two. You know, watch the exacta will pays. But I definitely think there were the thoughts as an upset potential.
All right. And the late double, the turf and the classic, Ed.
The turf, I did stick with my Euro probably wins this and tweeted yesterday, if a U.S. runner wins, I'm going to be out. Tarnawa, I was extremely bullish on. I know Kelly Riley was a fan as well from what she's seen. That was pretty much almost enough for me. Jockey change now, which is definitely stirs the pot. And I thought I appreciated trainer Weld being so honest about this filly's difficulties of getting to know. And it's definitely a step back that they're going to need to make a change so late. But hopefully her talent is enough, and she did get a pair of 124 Bristonette class ratings in her overseas wins. That definitely matches up with the likes of multiple Group 1 winner International Superstar Magical. I see it as a Jordan James 2-3-23 play here. 32, I guess, since I put Tarnawa on top, but most of my tickets are going to be thin to those two.
The situation with Keane doesn't bother you? I mean,
I'm hoping it actually helps. If the price goes up, I can't say it bothers me.
I think people that are behind her are going to stick with her. Yeah. I mean, and she absolutely. If you want,
it wouldn't have been my choice
ticket.
Of what to happen. But
he's highly capable.
Yeah, of course.
Soumillon
exactly.
Comes with this bigger, loftier, French accented
sure.
name. But
I'm sticking with on top.
You realize if Siskin and Tarnawa both win or both run big, it literally will be Keeneland.
I didn't.
Hey now,
folks.
I'll be here all. I won't be here all week. I'll be here until Saturday at about 7 o'clock when we hit the road for Ashtabula, which is probably where we'll end up.
Okay.
By the way,
I
was surprised I didn't get a response from you. I did get to Waffle House,
I
did text you.
Yeah.
After missing it for the Derby trip, I did get to Medina.
Yeah.
So that was good. Although I don't know if I'll ever. I don't know. Medina, well, it's not Medina. It's Muirfield that we'll be going.
Near Dublin.
Yeah. You knew where I was headed with that. The classic, Ed, before James Scully joins us.
Yeah, I'm anti-Baffert in here, and Tis the Law by my standards and Tom's Detat are the three I'm using. Very heavy. Being potentially thin with Monomoy Girl and then the 2 euros I mentioned in the turf, there should be some opportunity to stretch here, but I really like the three I mentioned. By my standards, the best price of those three. I understand the mile and a quarter questions. I think we're getting the right price to answer them in the spot. I do wish the last prep was at 9 furlongs, but again, I think the price compensates. And then Tis the Law and Tom's Detat, the thing to me that they have most in common is excuses in their last, and which some could say Tizzle had no excuse on the track, but it was a long campaign for him, and he flattened out. But to me, if either had won those races, they would be the clear favorite in this spot, and there were reasons they didn't, but those races do fit this race, and I can't believe the price we might get on Tom's Detat. I definitely see him as the value in the race.
I agree, and I'm a little concerned. I said in my write-up, if he's 6-1 when the gates open, I mean, he's the overlay. I think he's coming down from that,
right?
But 7-2 at the most, or at the least.
Yeah, I mean, I would say 9-2.
That'd be great. That would be fine.
The math.
That would be fine.
You know, and maybe Improbable and Max and Authentic don't all take the money we think, but between the three of them, they will. And then you throw in Tis the Law. I just I can't make it work that Tom Stetat's lower than 9-2, and I love it.
Ed DeRosa, everybody, EJXD2. Any other last-minute Twin Spires notations?
Yeah, the place jackpot wager, if you are not wager, ooh, promotion, 10,000 on the line each day. If you sweep the card, you get $6,000. If you hit at least 5 place bets, you split 4,000.
Wow. I also want to take the opportunity, because I didn't want to forget, our contributors and regulars, Dick Powell, Gus Alonzo, Richie Yang, all available, yep, and utilize their analysis available at Briz and through the Twin Spires information page.
Great stuff.
As well. All right.
Let's make some money.
Ed, get lucky out there.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Ed DeRosa, everybody. How was the kids' Halloween?
We had a blast.
Nice.
You saw EJ.
Oh, it was so funny.
Ship.
The rocket.
Yeah.
That was adorable. That was great.
Yeah, we had a good time. Weather was great, as it is today.
Perfect. Ed DeRosa, everybody. And hour one essentially is wrapped. And we're not going to take any kind of break. I will just do a station identification. This is At the Races with Steve.